Ladies and gentlemen, the Gift of Gaming podcast is back after all our technical difficulties, and we're back with a games club. That's right, we're going to sit down for the entire episode and finally talk about Ark Raiders. Play the music. All right, it's me, your host, Darren Wade. Today I'm joined by my own blood and brother, Andrew Wade.
Hey, Darren.
Hello, and the hard mode man himself, Kevin Brennan.
But it's not my new nickname. Yeah. The hard mode man. I haven't played a hard mode game in months. I love it though.
But I would say, out of the people in the podcast, you're the most likely to play a game on hard mode.
I do like hard mode. Mm. I like the challenge. It often ends up with me like not finishing a game because I'm like, it's way too hard. What was that? The Switch one I kept banging on about. Not Final Fantasy Tactics, the like other one from Square Enix.
Triangle Strategy.
Yeah. I tried to play that on
you
hard.
So you finished that and went back to that on hard mode?
No, I never finished it. I got like 2/3 of the way through on hard mode and was unable to beat a battle and was like, well, guess I'm never playing this again.
It's never getting touched again. Yeah.
Speaking of hard modes or games that are very difficult, I am currently playing through Final Fantasy Tactics on easy. I was playing it on normal. And I had to reduce it down to easy because it was just too hard. It's still really fucking hard on easy mode.
Really?
Yeah. Because you jumped into like... And I'm further than I ever got in the game before, so I've no idea what's to come now. I've never gotten this far. But you're thrown into kind of like interesting battles. Like I had my whole team ready and prepped for this fight. This whole conversation with this guy, and he's giving his whole fucking monologue at the top of these steps in a fucking cathedral or whatever. I'm like, oh, I got the team to beat this guy's ass. And for some strange reason, it was just my main character, Ramza, fighting this dude one-on-one. No healing items, no potions, no nothing. So it was like a who can kill the other person first as quick as they can. And he's just not, my guy's just not good enough to do that. So I was like, well, back to the drawing board. So it keeps kind of throwing these kind of, these spanners
in the works.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, fuck, what am I meant to do here?
So. I remember, I know we're going to talk about Ark Raiders, but I remember in Final Fantasy X, my first ever playthrough that when I was younger, I never used Kamari because I was like, oh, let's, you know, start with Sphere Grid, isn't that good? And I don't know what to do with them. I'll just use the actual characters. Then you get to that part where you have to fight the other two Ronsos, just him, and I just couldn't beat him. And I stopped playing
so
again for like 6 months, and then eventually I had to go back and start the whole thing again. Wow. And then my Kamari was like a world
an
leader,
absolute
you know?
Beast, yeah.
Which is great, jump. Great for the story because he's like defending Yuna, you know, so it's nice to have him strong.
But yeah. And Andrew, dare I ask, are you playing anything at the minute other than Ark Raiders?
I am, oddly enough, because I can't play it all the time because that would just be crazy. Playing the new, well, the Spider-Man 2. Miles Morales and Peter Parker.
Nice. Yeah.
Loving it. Running into a major problem. I like all the, get all the bananas and open up all the coins and
collect
stuff.
Collect
this game has a lot of...
I'm going to say something probably that's a bit of a hot take. I care not for the Spider-Man games.
That's fine. I think it's superhero games in general, people tend to have a love-hate with.
I know the Spider-Man game is well made, but and Graham was the one who was convincing me to play it. Like, I have it on the PlayStation, not because I bought it, because we share our profile. He was like, you should definitely play these games. And I played Spider-Man 2, because he was kind of saying, oh, we'll go and you're not going to miss, like, the story stuff is fine. Like, you won't be left behind or whatever. And I played it for about 3 or 4 hours, and I was like, nope. And I think it was possibly because, as you said, I think as the game was opening up, I was like, there's way too many things here for me to do.
As soon as you get access to... free swinging through the city, you get like notifications, oh this is going on, and all of a sudden your map just fills with clutter, and it's great for me. I love that kind of, I'm hoovering up all the clutter as I go kind of thing, and getting all the new suits for dealing with the kind of, I love that kind of stuff, but the main story is suffering something fierce because I just am not touching it.
I
love the main story and I love the story in general. I'm really behind it kind of thing. But there's all those things to pick up.
I think it was too intimidating for me when I turned it on and be like, no, this isn't the game I want right now. And I've never looked back. And that was fucking years ago. Do you know what I mean? Spider-Man 2 has been out for ages, but I've never played
it. Only went free on PlayStation there, I think, last weekend. So I picked it up then. I've just been kind of... That's my... If I see people on Ark, I'll jump on Ark. If there's no one on...
I'll jump on Ark.
Really bored, I'll jump on Ark. And then every now and again, I'll jump on Spider-Man.
Nice.
Do pick up coins.
Kevin, are you playing anything else other than Ark currently?
No.
Just Ark?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I played a few rounds at a beta of Marathon last night.
Oh, what you think?
Which is similar to Ark. I like it, man. I didn't play with anyone. I want to play. It's a bit like, I suppose this will tie in. When you start a new game, especially something like Ark Raiders or whatever, where there's such a learning curve in terms of like items and rarities and what everything does and what all your equipment does, what do all the weapons do, what's strong, what's weak, what takes what ammo, how does healing work, what do enemies do, all that jazz. I played like the tutorial mission and it was fine. Then I went into a solo by myself and like got a few bits and extracted, killed some robots, and then got to another one and I tried to open some sort of like chest I had to hack in a room, and then all these really strong robots came in and fucked me up really badly. And I was like, well, it's 1 a.m. going to bed. So that's my impression of it so far. It's fun. The like gunplay feels really nice. I had to change some settings, but it feels really nice and feels really crispy. I like a first-person shooter. Mm-hmm. It's got that kind of Bungie, like Halo-y, Titanfall-y, Apex Legends-y. I know Apex.
Somewhat Destiny.
Yeah, Destiny, like that. The guns, the sound's really nice, and it's really like the bullets feel impactful or whatever. The color scheme, like you were saying, Andy, is outrageous.
It hurts my head.
It's neon, right?
That's what yeah, like. Everything's neon. But it's like, I think I could get used to it. Yeah. I'm just, Ark Raiders is so like...
realistic, kind of.
Realistic-y and drab in comparison in a good way. Like it's, whereas this is like, everything's pink and green and stuff. But the concept's cool. The gameplay's fun. Like I'll definitely play some more of it today. Whether or not I'll pick it up when it comes out.
Watch a moment with you later on today and see if it's actually any better. Like when you actually know the person playing absolutely. With kind of thing, so.
Both of you are welcome to jump
Chris,
on.
Chris would be delighted.
Yeah, Chris was on with Niall and stuff yesterday, I think, before, well, we were down here.
Yeah.
And they jumped off. I think Chris was still on, but Niall jumped off before I got home, and I was just
Is wrecked. It Trios?
Yeah.
Trios. Trios is kind of like the thing.
Yeah. Kind of is the thing. Yeah, it is a nice number or whatever. I do miss the option for a four-player squad, but four is kind of a...
sweaty.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels like a big number to be... dealing with.
For now it does. If they play an arc, I'm like, imagine having a fourth person to fuck up your game on your team. I'm like,
oh. Helldivers, that was four.
Yeah, but it's PvE, not PvP.
I suppose, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Actually, yeah.
Well,
the extra, well,
everything's PvE for you, but you know.
Hey, I'm not the Andy you want to be given out about.
We were playing Catan last night, listeners, and Andrew, who's done nothing but been the friendliest person forever on Ark Raiders, and we'll get into that, was playing Catan, and I've never seen someone play Catan in such a strange way. Like, I think my favorite bit was you had the robber to place on anybody's tile, and Kevin was your next. You were close to winning, and Kevin was your next biggest competitor. And rather than rob him blind and stop his production of wood, whatever, in Catan, you decided to be like, no, I'm going to place this in the desert and be nice to everybody. Little did you know you robbed Luke, who was in last
that
place.
Yeah, poor guy just got so much shit off me without realizing. I didn't mean to.
It was great. It was like, as he was doing it, I kept looking at you, Darren, and being like, he's fit. This guy's doomed.
Yeah.
I'm going to take everything. I'm going to take everything from him.
Too kind. All right, Jim, we'll snap into our episode today, which is, of course, a Games with the Club on Ark Raiders. And to kick us off, I'm going to go around the table and ask us a quick overview. Don't go into too much depth. We'll cover all of our lanes as we go. But a mark out of 10 and your kind of top-level thoughts on Ark Raiders. Who wants to kick off?
Yeah, I'll go. I would say I'd be giving it a 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10.
I would give it more, but I find that there is... And you made a good point, Darren. We were talking about it yesterday. Is that what they're adding into it isn't really bringing a huge amount to it. That it needs to kind of like to hook people more to bring them in. I know the roadmap's in place and it's got all these great things and great plans, and that might bump my score up as it goes. But with the addition of the Firefly and the Comet, it just seemed, you come across them occasionally, but they don't bring anything new really. There's a bit more terror if you come across a Firefly while you're running against the wind of the hurricane, but it's a very situational thing to come across. But like I said, so far, loving it, fantastic. A few things could do better, and they're definitely need to step up the game on cheating that's going on in it, because I've come across that a couple of times and it is fairly soul destroying when it happens.
It's cheating. I think I've only had the misfortune to come across once and I got all my stuff back from it, which was a nice situation.
You get your stuff back, but you only get what you brought in back. Yeah, you don't get what you've taken out, kind of thing. So like
I don't know how many times I've come against cheaters, because I didn't get my stuff back when we ran into cheaters. So I don't know how good their system actually is.
Yeah, because I wonder, is the system poor and you didn't get the stuff back, or was the person who killed me and Andrew the only one of that team potentially cheating, so the other two weren't?
I'm just shit. But no.
It was 1v3. I wouldn't say I'd call you shit.
No, because I know, like, because one of the games I was playing, again, like that, was purely everyone's chill. I think it was Bird City, which, again, is just pure chill in the servers I play in, kind of thing. And I was going out, extracting via the train, got down, and there was a guy, do you know where the train pulls up? He was in there before the train arrived, but he was shooting and murdering everyone who tried to evac via the train. And like that, as soon as the train pulled up, I was there crawling around. The train pulls up, he suddenly appears in the train, walks out, grabs his stuff, hops back in, and kind of glitches out the train again into the thing. He's like, nah, Nah.
Yeah.
Never got that stuff back.
I think they are aware of that as an issue as well.
But yeah.
So 9 out of 10 for you?
9 out of 10 for me.
I'll go next, Kev, if you don't mind. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. With the caveat that I will say, if it didn't have the interactions that it did with other players, which I guess was what the game is built for, but in terms of if I wasn't having the fun of interactions that I was having with other players, for me currently, it would be a 7 out of 10.
Mm. Yeah, the interactions do massively boost up the enjoyability of the game.
And again, had we had done this episode, let's say, 3 or 4 weeks into my playthrough, I might be like you, fucking 9 out of 10, let's go. But the game has waned a lot, and it's a game that I'm really enjoying playing, and I'll look back at fondly, but I don't think it's going to enter the realms of greatest games I've ever played. Because I know Chris was saying a lot when we were coming up to the Game Awards, he was like, Ark Raiders should have been given, you know, so much more than it was. And I believe in certain aspects it should have potentially, but I think it won exactly what it should have won, which was best multiplayer game. Do you know what I mean? Because I think it is a fantastic multiplayer game. I think, and I'll go talk about this towards, we've mapped out what we're going to discuss in the episode, but I'll talk about this in greater depth. But I think the game for me, it dies at a certain point in terms of what you're able to do, what's left to do. And the only thing it can offer you right now to encourage you to keep playing is to just hit the reset button and go again, which I am not fond of as a gameplay mechanic to keep you tied in. You know, it's like, hey, did you enjoy those dopamine hits? I did. Would you like all those dopamine hits again? It's like, maybe. I don't know. So that's when we'll get into that when we talk about the end. But I think that's where I'm like, it's a great game, or it's a very, very good game. To me, it could be one of the greats if there was just a bit, if we were getting the stuff a bit quicker at the minute, I think. And it's, again, I'm not in game development. I think they're doing a great job in terms of bringing things out, but stuff isn't happening, or the changes to hook me, to keep me going, to make me say, this is a fucking unbelievable, they're not happening quick enough for me. So, Kevin.
My score, I think I'm close to an 8.5 or a 9. Like, I'd be similar to you in that now I'm getting to a stage where I'm definitely waning a bit. Like, I'm enjoying doing the trials and the projects. And, like, I mean, we still haven't killed the matriarch, which is outrageous. But just because we keep waiting on Niall to do it.
Yeah.
So I'd like to do that and stuff. I love the PvP. I really like the gunplay. The interactions are absolutely hilarious. The score... Yeah, 8.5 or 9. Like, I mean, I take your point about being like, it's not doing enough to like keep me hooked, but like, how many hours do you have topside?
So this is another interesting thing about the game, which I think is hilarious, but I have 112 hours playing the game topside, which is great. Loads of fun. But I've done the majority of that with people. Like, in terms of, I've gone on solo raids, of course, but I think for me the excitement is to do it with mates. And I think in situations where, like, if people fell off or weren't interested, there'd be nothing to keep me... I wouldn't be, because I know you're a big solo player, aren't you? You love going into the things by yourself. And
I love
like
the
that.
Social interactions of just not knowing who anybody is or what anybody's like.
Yeah, which I think is nice. But for me, the social, going in by myself is kind of like, I don't find that as exciting. For me, it's like the going in with your mates, coming across teams, and especially with lobbies with, like, you know, mixed in with Kev or not, and we don't know who's going to shoot. That's where the fun is for me. The going
I know
the,
who's
going
to shoot
the going in the looting safely and the leaving doesn't appeal to me. So yes, most of my hours, but I mean the gameplay, my total game time is like 205-206 hours.
But that my point just being that, like, that in terms of, like, for me, games I've spent 200 hours on are very limited.
True.
Like,
yep.
Final Fantasy VII Remake, Apex Legends, like the Halo games, the original Final Fantasies, if you count the multiple playthroughs, that sort of stuff. But, like, not many games, even if you just take the hours I spent topside, I think it's 140-ish, maybe 100. Yep. Yeah, 140 or so.
I'm sorry, for those who don't know what Kevin means by topside, is that the game will tell us how many hours you've actually spent in raids versus your total time playing the game, because you do spend... pretty much 50% of your time in your lobby. At least by my time, it's
in the
almost
inventory
50%.
Management sim that's built into the game.
Yes.
I've got about, I think I've 210. So my lobbies aren't too bad, because I think a lot of them are just me pressing free loadout and waiting to load into a game, you know? But, like, yeah, I've 140 hours in it, which is like I have that in Remake. I think I just about have that in Rebirth before my hard mode playthrough, which is obviously an exceptional game. I didn't get that in Clair Obscur. There's almost nothing else I spent that much time playing. But so, in terms of being like, oh, well, there's not enough, like, to keep me hooked now, like, yeah, but it kept me hooked for 140 hours, yeah. Which it's is mad.
It's different, though. I think the one thing I would say about that, the most of the games that you've compared it to there are single-player narrative-based games. I think you're always going to spend more time in multiplayer games with your mates, just as a given. Like, because you play through, like, Clair Obscur, you play through, you finish the game, and it's... You might revisit it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
But even like, you know, Apex, obviously I've spent 1,000 hours or whatever playing, but a lot of other shooters, like I never got that much time in the Call of Duties or whatever else, and it's like, it's an exceptionally long amount of time for me to be. I've been playing nothing but Air Crater since like November, which is four full months. Which has done brilliant. So anyway, I'm sure we'll get into it all because we're probably like half an hour into this podcast already.
15 minutes, so we're all good.
Yeah, we're good. But yeah, I'd say like 8.5, 9, anywhere around there, I think is a fair
nice
score for the game.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No qualms with that whatsoever. So we'll talk about, I guess, kind of the two main aspects so people are aware who maybe are listening to this episode and have not played Ark Raiders. The main gameplay loop is this is essentially an extraction looter shooter with essentially two modes, PvE and PvP, because the game, you know, allows for both. PvE is you team up kind of, I guess, with, or not necessarily have to team up, but you're loaded into a map with loads of other raiders, as they're called, and your job is to go loot stuff that you need to go bring back topside to upgrade all your shit, and...
It should point it out as well that you don't know in any given lobby if you're doing PvP or PvE. That just kind of gets thrust upon you, depending on who you come across.
Which, to me, is the real... what would you say, strength in the game, that when you hop into a lobby, you're like, I'm going to kill some of the big robots because I need those things. But there's a tension in the game that the whole time you're doing that, you're like, are they going to shoot me in the back? Am I going to be able to extract easily here? Is it going to be difficult? And for me, I was really excited about this game. I still really am. I think this is a really, really good game. But the excitement for me was this whole PvP thing and proximity chat, which wasn't a thing that I ever really got into before. I wasn't an online gamer per se. And especially when I played Call of Duty, I wasn't on a mic. I wasn't there cursing people when I lost games or whatever else. I did that silently to myself. But it was a really interesting concept that you could go into these maps and team up potentially with people. And if they're close enough to you, you can hear them on proximity chat. You either get on or you don't get on. I need you agree to team up and take on bigger things or go your separate ways. And that, as I suppose the main hook for the game, is unbelievable and really, really enjoyable. And as we've said on so many episodes, or even when we're like hanging out chatting, we always bring up like, oh, this moment that we had in Ark Raiders, like with these other, with these people, with these strangers, is quality, I think. Now, the one thing I will say is the way the lobbies are based, which is a very clever aspect of it, is this kind of aggression-based matchmaking, is I think the term that they've used for it.
Yeah, now there's one thing I've noticed. There's an article came out there. Apparently, one of the main devs denied that ABMM is actually a thing in Ark. So it definitely doesn't work.
I listened to the interview with him. Yeah. So what he's saying is that the people are saying like there's loads of things that are taken into account and other things that aren't, that people are wrong about. So for example, people were saying, you know, if I shoot second, does that? And he was kind of saying that doesn't really, like, if you're in a fucking gunfight with people, that's aggression.
If the bullets of your gun are hitting another person, that's aggression.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think what he was saying was there are some assumptions that people were making are wrong, but that they are that in terms of how you play the game is taken into account and is putting into other lobbies, but maybe not necessarily in the way that people are assuming it is. And I think he was saying that people are probably going too deep into that, and that there's ways that, like, oh, we've no way to fucking calculate some of these things that you're talking about.
What do you think we are?
So, like, I think it is in terms of you go into a match and you fucking do, like, you know, 600 damage to raiders, regardless of the circumstances, that's aggression, essentially, kind of what he was, you know, not owning up to, but, like, leaning in towards. So that if you go quietly around maps forever and just talk to people, you're going to stick in those lobbies, essentially. Otherwise, you can be jumped up.
Affectionately known as Care Bear lobbies now, apparently.
Or Sleepy Dad lobbies, as we like to call it.
Sleepy Dad lobbies.
Sleepy Dad lobbies, yeah.
So that's me right in, though.
Yeah. Which is the nice thing about changing the game, because, like I said, if I hop into games with you, Andrew, you're kind of in the Sleepy Dad lobbies, and it's a loot-friendly, everyone gets on, you've got nice interactions, people are helping each other, yada, yada, yada. And then you go, but then we can play a different, entirely different game. If I hop on with Kevin now, we go into Stella Montes with a free loadout. And we'll explain what all that means in a bit. But there's essentially kind of two different games going on there, which is another, you know, great grab for it, that it gives the option.
Which is why I am so terrified of playing with you or Kev or Niall, because I walk into this game and it's like, I will sit here and pretend to shoot the enemies because I don't want to end up in these kind of horrible lobbies.
Who is the most aggressive?
Niall.
Is it Niall? Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm. And you, Darren, you act as if, oh, it's, when I go in with Kevin Niall, it's so dangerous and scary and innocent old me, Darren. Like, the amount of times we've been in situations, and maybe Niall's the one who kind of pushes you on as well, but we'll be in a situation and the two of you will be eyeing someone up and be like, but we could take all their goop.
Yeah.
It's such an easy kill. Look at this. We could do this, that, and the other. I'm like, no, guys. They're just innocent. No, let's get on with it.
Sometimes the devil on my shoulder, but my stats will speak for themselves. In terms of the amount of raiders I've killed or downed are a fraction of yours. And who knows? I think I'm like 50% of what you're on. Who knows what my fraction is?
And then you compare it to mine, which is just fucking nonsensical.
With it, you have like killed 15 people in your 163
hours topside now and 15 players killed. And that was all self-defense.
The duality of man.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane as a way to go about it. So, yeah, so the PvP is an unknown because it's all depending on the players. And, of course, people come in with different loadouts, strong weapons, weak weapons, which makes the whole battle differently. But before we go too deep into that, we'll talk about the PvE side of things. And so you're raiding the top side. You're going top side to collect loot. But the danger that exists is a thing called the Ark. And there's loads of different kind of Ark enemies. Different strengths. You've got kind of, I suppose, drones in the form of the Wasp, the Hornet, and like, is the Firefly the third?
Firefly
one?
Is now the third one? Drone, yeah.
Yeah. So they pose their own threat. They're kind of flying around as sentries, essentially, kind of looking for people. Wasps being, I guess, generally speaking, the easiest. Hornets being a bit more armored, and then Fireflies being the toughest of the
fully
three.
Armored ones, yeah.
Each can equally, though, depending on the situation you're in, like if you're
completely ruined. Oh,
wasps have fucked me up way too many times.
Yeah,
way too many times.
So they're kind of the kind of in air ones. You've got the kind of ground ones, which consist of the pop, the fireball, and now the comet. All of them are kind of like we call them roly polies, I guess. These like kind of they're spherical enemies that roll around. The pop is kind of a suicidal one that will just run up to you and blow up. The fireball is one that will roll up to you and launch a flamethrower at you, and the comet is now kind of that's the newest one, and that's I guess a suicidal one that blows up with a much bigger explosion than the pop, because
it's
that's
a kamikaze bomber with like an A-bomb strapped to it, that kind of thing.
And it's good, it reminds me of some of the robots from one of the robots from Robot Wars, Sir Killalot or something like that. It really has that
that vibe.
Yeah, interesting. So one of the things that make a point at this stage, and this is one of the reasons why I'm kind of like don't know how I feel about where the game is going, but in terms of the Firefly and the Comet were two of the most recently introduced arcs that I was really excited for, because I think it had gotten, and no, we hadn't fought a Matriarch yet, but from the other perspective of the arc, they had kind of gotten a bit
stale.
I knew exactly what I was dealing with, and I was a little bit disappointed with the Firefly and the Comet, because the Firefly is essentially the fireball in the air, and the Comet is kind of he's got that kind of, it stuns you as well hurts you. It's almost like the Hornet of the ground.
I think what got me for those as well is when they said they were going to release a new air one and a new ground one, I knew they weren't going to be big arcs, because that's for April in the roadmap.
Yes.
They mentioned a new large arc kind of thing. So okay, they're going to be small ones kind of thing. But I get why they put the Firefly in. It's just basically the next armored version kind of thing. So Wasp has no armor. Hornet has frontal armor. Firefly has full armor.
Yeah.
But I was kind of looking for something that wasn't just a bigger Wasp.
So my thing about it was, and I was having a good conversation with Colin about this last night, which is why I was slightly disappointed about this, because when I think of all the world of Ark you could have, I was like, and again, very difficult to develop these things in AI, and or how your, I don't mean AI isn't the bad AI, I mean like how your the AI of the computer enemies work. I would have loved a Terminator-style humanoid kind of arc thing that could open doors. Do you know what I mean? Like something that's very different from what we've seen so far. It's not a flying arc. It's not a roly-poly arc. It's like, oh, there's a new... It doesn't have to be massive. And it can be not an incredibly difficult to kill. It doesn't have to be a boss type thing. But imagine you're going through, you know, the reception area of Blue Gate, and you hear like a clunk, 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 you know, Terminator-style walking thing, and you've got to deal with this, you know, and it could fucking run at you and open doors, nowhere safe kind of thing. Because nowhere, like once you close a door with
you won't be Nemesis from Resident Evil kind of thing. But
it doesn't even have to be that big. Very, like, it could be easy to kill, but something that adds a different kind of...
A shredder flare. That can open doors.
I mean, kind of, yeah. It's, I guess something a little bit more... different, a little bit out there to kind of make me say, oh, okay, this is brand new. Because otherwise it's like, there's a roly-poly thing that looks different. There's a flying thing that looks different in my mind. And I don't mean to be too...
Yeah, and that's where the thing is, like, because the last one they added was the Shredder, which was completely different from everything that was currently in the game, so...
And the Shredder's still class, like...
Shredder's still a nightmare. Yeah. You come across that in a tight corridor and it's like, kiss your look goodbye, really.
The Shredder's great. I remember the one update with it. Like, and the Shredder, for people who haven't played the game. It kind of like floats along. It's like a floating cylinder thing with an eye at the top.
It reminds
me. Float at you real fast, go red, make an alarm and shoot like shotgun shells in every direction. But there was a patch in like December. They were like, oh, we're going to introduce some balance changes. Everyone's like, cool, they're going to do this, that, and the other. And they doubled the Shredder's movement speed. Everyone's like, what is going on? Like, why are you making this thing
more? You ain't running away from this now.
Yeah. But the Shredders are great in terms of what I mean to say is that totally changed the introduction of the Shredder totally changed the gameplay. It's like, it only exists in that Stellamontis map, which is kind of the PvP map, essentially. Like, not their intention, but it's kind of what's happened.
It's tight corridors and things. Yeah. So it's kind of designed around the idea of, like, you know.
And the Shredder kind of changed the... How the whole, because I mean, you could be in the middle of a firefight, but these things are attracted to noise. They move very quickly. They'll come in, and everybody knows how much they can fuck you up. So if they come around in the middle of a firefight between two teams, people are gonna just fucking
dart behind. Yeah, and it's like because they can one shot you from full health if they're right beside you. Yeah. So like when you're in the middle of a scrap, one comes in and like you hear panic over proximity chat, and everyone's diving behind cover and through doors and like trying to close doors as quick as they can to get out. And like,
I think my favorite on that was, I think it was playing with you guys and Instella, and I was being my usual Care Bear kind of self, like we should say hello to everyone kind of thing, and we all got wrecked. And I was ended up crawling around with the Shredder flying around, guys, the dead bodies everywhere, and it's like just ding the doorbell for the guys. Open the door, the Shredder flew in.
I have that on video, and I think I was like, Andrew, go over to that door and tell him you've got a telegram. And then you we'll crawl over to the door, and there was two Shredders where you were, and a group of people on the other side, like healing themselves up after killing all of us. And you just like hit the button, you were like, telegram for the assholes. And you open that, and the two Shredders go in and just go, and like fucking fuck everybody up. But that's what I mean. They created a whole different way in which the game could be played. And I was and again, this could be maybe my own. Like,
I get that. You were hoping for something. They changed the dynamic and the meta of the game in a sense, especially, I mean, it's just for the one map, whereas I haven't even played with the two new enemies because I was away. It only came out during the week. But with those, I get that it's just like the same kind of threat. It just breathes fire from the sky and has a bit more armor. You know,
it's a stronger iteration of what's already there kind of thing.
And they've said that there's a large, like there's large arc, etc., coming in the future, but like the large arc in the new map isn't until April.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll still be playing this game in April. And again, not that this is a bad game, I pumped loads of hours into it, but in terms of like...
I could come back to it though. That's the one thing about it is like, I can kind of see myself waning a little bit and I'm looking for something maybe a little bit new or a little bit different, which I'll probably get into soon. But it is the type of game where I could see myself putting it down and then in 6 weeks you, Andy, being like, oh, they released this new arc, it's class, and like they did all these balance changes and it's fantastic, and just getting sucked in again.
Yeah, you know? I love the fact that you just assume I'll be playing it 6 weeks now because I won't give up on it, and you're completely right.
No,
I will.
Yeah, there's no
but
way.
Yeah,
it's like your new No Man's Sky, man. It's like, you know,
I needed something to fill the No Man's Sky gap until Light and Fire never comes out.
There are other kind of bigger enemies as well. The Bastion, the Bombardier, the Rocketeer, they're kind of, well, not the Rocketeer, but the Bastion and Bombardier are kind of like big, kind of almost like moving tanks, essentially.
Crab
monsters. One fires a machine gun, one fires rockets. The Bombardier is quite cool because it's got two kind of, they're called spotters, two floating robots that will search people out, lock onto them, and then kind of from no matter where you are on the map, the Bombardier will fire
onto that spot.
And that is such a cool, like, that's what I'm a big fan of them in terms of the noise that makes, because you can be running through a map doing your own thing and you'll hear loads of gunfire and then you'll hear their shoo, you know, all these kind of like missiles being, and you're kind of like, someone's getting fucked up by a Bombardier, you know? Because the one thing that's great about the arc is that each one kind of has its own very recognizable noise. Like, you know, someone's, you know when someone's fighting a Bastion, you know when someone's fighting a Bombardier, you absolutely know when someone's fighting like a Wasp or whatever else with their kind of screeches and things like that are quite cool. So there's lots to kill, and we've done the Queen, but not the Matriarch. So the Queen's the second hardest one to kill at the minute, I think, the Matriarch being the hardest.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Matriarch is the Queen.
Queen guards the Harvester.
Queen guards the Harvester, and it's quite difficult to take on because people are trying to get the Harvester at the time, and has a lot of... It can move a lot faster than the Matriarch can.
Yeah.
You know, the Queen can cover a lot of ground in a very short amount of time, and all its things are designed to like murder one player in particular. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Matriarch, as it's walking around, it's a lot slower. It's got a hell of a lot more armor. It's got a big photon shield thing that it puts around itself, so unless you're directly underneath it, you can't hit it.
Yeah.
And it's constantly dropping Bastions, Bombardiers, Leapers, and all manner of stuff around it as its children.
All of which are difficult to kill by themselves if you don't have the right weapons and explosives. And then you end up using the explosives you would use for the Matriarch to try and survive a Bombardier or a Bastion or whatever.
Yeah.
I do like the one part, because you can knock off parts of the Matriarch to expose the core, and then you literally, as soon as that part falls off, like it's a big red glowing thing, and in any video game, you know, shoots a big red glowy thing.
Yeah.
But as soon as that thing falls off, you literally see everyone's aim switch to it, and from everywhere come at the wolf packs, the Felions, the Equalizers, all aiming at this one part, and the Matriarch kind of moves when it's getting hit to like it looks like it's trying to shield the area, but it looks class because all this stuff plows into it and it starts to stagger away from it all. So as soon as the part goes, the entire lobby goes, let's shoot at that part. And yep, you just see it all, everything just breaks out.
And it's a great thing about the arc in terms of how, again, we talk about how lobbies change. And I think you see it with different timings. I've noticed it now a lot. We're close to the expedition, which we'll go into in greater detail. The expedition launches tomorrow, I think. And in order to get the most out of your expedition, you need a huge amount of loot. And people tend to say that killing bastions and bombardiers are the quickest way to get loot. So I've noticed now all the lobbies that I'm in, when I go in, let's say, like you and me were doing a few rounds yesterday, everyone's going in to kill a bombardier or a bastion. Whereas a month ago or 2 weeks ago, if you were playing the game,
they're left well enough alone.
Because, I mean, they're fucking dangerous. No one's like that. Whereas now everyone's like, so many times I've come in and I'm like, I'm going to kill this thing. And 2 seconds later, it's already dead. And everyone's scavenging the body. You're like, fuck.
This is the gas thing, though, because I've done both expeditions. Well, I have done both expeditions now by the time it's rolled around. But the same thing happened last time because everyone realized that the Bombardier at the time was the best way because it has something like 20, I think it's 22 or 24 searchable areas. Mm-hmm. And if you get one by yourself, you can come out with like 200-300k on one thing alone if you get the good loot off, that kind of thing. But on the run up to the first expedition, they were left well enough alone. And then a week beforehand, you couldn't find a live one anywhere. They were just getting tanked everywhere.
Which is interesting in terms of, like, that's one thing I will say hats off to them, because the way they developed the game or the things that they have within the game, like the expedition, it changes
the dynamic.
It changes behavior of people because people are on a different kind of route at certain times. So I quite like that. I quite feel like I'm like, okay, I'm going to go in and fucking take all these bombardiers for myself. It's like, oh, everybody's had the exact same fucking idea. Like, you know, how quick can I do this?
The new thing they added in as well, which I thought was really good, the new part you need for the wolf pack is now a Rocketeer driver.
Yeah.
Which means everyone's now attacking the Rocketeers, which is great because no one's prepared to attack the Rocketeers.
Well,
and I'm seeing flares everywhere these days.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that is an interesting thing for those that don't know. So wolf pack is a incredible, we'll go through some of the loot, some of the weapons and stuff. A wolf pack is a grenade that when you throw it, blows up into loads of mini grenades and they all locate and attack the nearest arc. It's one of the highest damage, I think. Weapons.
1,000 damage, I think, or
highest
like
damage grenade
in the game. And it used to be fairly easy. Once you got the blueprint for it, it used to be fairly easy just to create. I think it was only explosives and arc something or other.
Motion cores.
Yeah. But now they've added that you need a Rocketeer driver, which has made it, I think, the premium item that it should always be. Because I think there was a time where I was going into a match, I was like, I got 5 wool packs with me. I just made them before we hopped out here. Yeah. And you go in and you obliterate everything and then you take it all and you go home. And there was still a challenge, but not as maybe as much a challenge as it should have been. So that was a nice touch to be like, no, this is a premium item and you need
to take down the premium arc if you want it, kind of thing.
Exactly, yeah. So I think that was quite a cool update. Again, we'll go to kind of some of the ones you haven't mentioned. I think the only thing we haven't mentioned really is the Sentry and the Sentinels. There's like turrets that exist around the place. You kill them and there's a Sentinel, which is great. You can hear it from almost anywhere in the map, but it'll lock onto you from ages away. And if it stays locked onto you for long enough, it fires a very powerful
sniper.
It's
a railgun kind of
thing. But it's cool because you know from anywhere, I think it's like a bang, like you can hear this noise from almost anywhere in the map. You're like, oh, someone's
aggroed the thing.
Yeah, and then there's other ones known as the Surveyors, which are kind of a funny one. They're just like a big roly-poly thing that just surveys the map. It's no real threat to you, but they're very hard to kill.
Well, if you do hit them and they start getting annoyed, they'll like roll, because they roll around real fast and they'll roll straight at you and hit you.
And it will do a fair bit of damage.
Yeah, very good.
It's terrifying as well, because it'll spin on the spot for a second as if it's gathering speed and it will gun it in a straight line. So you can get out of its way and it'll fly past. If it hits you though, it just fucking wrecks you.
We're going to the maps, gentlemen, which to me is one of the most impressive things about this game in terms of, I think, of how it looks.
Mm.
These maps are massive.
Yeah.
We've got Damned Battlegrounds, Buried City, Spaceport, Blue Gate and Stellamontis. Stellamontis being slightly different, that it's much, much smaller and it's all indoors. And again, corridors, rooms.
Dark and confined kind of.
Yeah. Whereas Damned Battlegrounds, Buried City, Spaceport, Blue Gate are all very big maps. And I think from a graphic perspective, the game looks phenomenal. You walk around these maps and you can see for so long.
You can see the entire map.
And you can see all the arcs that are flying in the air. You can see the arcs that are walking along
the ground. If you've noticed, and it does render a little poorly, but if you're in Buried City, you can see the launch tower for Spaceport. And vice versa, if you're in Spaceport, you can see Buried City.
Yeah, oh, that's quite cool. If you go high enough up, you can see bits from a lot of the maps, like
you can see
Spaceport,
you can see the dam tower as well.
Yeah, because it's all, when you look at, like, when you're going to select or whatever, you've got like a menu and it's kind of like a 2D map from above. But you tend to just pick the levels. But if you actually look, like if you go to Spaceport and you're like, oh, Buried City's to the southwest or I don't know where it is. You can go up, turn, look southwest and then see the unique piece of architecture from Buried City, like the apartments or whatever else. You can see them in the distance and the biome and stuff, which is cool. So like you're always dropping down on this big plane, which is why there's rumors that one of the maps is going to be like a volcano map, because there's a
volcanic rise, a giant volcano.
There's a volcano there and it's on the map and you can see it in the game. And they're like, well, there's no other locations at the moment here, so maybe they're going to
There's Caldera Downs as well, which looks like a... what you call them, geyser pool area kind of thing as well, but it looks to take up quite a bit of space too.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's judging by the roadmap, I think, because the picture beside the new map, as far as I can tell, so it hasn't given anything, just says new map, but there's like all these like small symbols beside everything, like Bird City has the two birds and but this new map icon has what looks like a reclining seat and an umbrella, like a holiday resort type thing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I'd say it'll be this geyser pool thing. It must have been like a tourist hotspot, is what I'm
but
getting
that's
from
the... It's right below the volcano. So my guess is if they bring in a new like hurricane or stuff like that, it's going to be something
like a lava flow.
Yeah, something to do with the volcano above you.
That could be quite cool. So with all these maps, all great. I'll go through kind of conditions. So like you can go into the map as standard. Go in the daytime, tends to, like a normal map in the daytime tends to be the safest time to go to a map in terms of the least amount of arc you're going to get on a level, and people tend to be friendly.
Even in daytime, there's variations on weather.
Yes.
So like in Damned Battlegrounds, it could be, you know, lovely and sunny. It could be raining and visibility's low. There's like a forest fire thing. There can be like dust storms in different levels, that sort of stuff. So it's like even the base maps with nothing else, it gives you variety. Like you go in sometimes with a sniper rifle on Buried City and be like, oh, you know, I'll have it, maybe we can pick up some people from the roof, you know, whatever else. And then you go in and it's like, oh, I can't see more
it's a dust storm.
This is terrible.
And it changes the, like, I mean, in terms of the dynamic and how the game feels, because when you're getting close, I should have said this, I suppose, for people who haven't played the game and don't know the rule. When you go out into a raid, your time is 30 minutes is all you have topside, because after the 30 minutes, there's a cataclysm of sorts, a comet or something comes down or a missile comes down, blows the area up. So you have to be out before your 30 minutes. The longer you stay out, the more extract points close. So by the end of your last like 8 or 9 minutes, there's only one extract point that still exists. So the idea is that it pulls people to certain area of the maps as it goes down. So almost forcing, not necessarily PvP, but forcing a interaction of kinds, which is a very, very cool idea. But when you are doing maps when it's raining, there's like, you know, or it's a bit darker, there's a bit more tension about it, those kind of weather, because you can't hear things as clearly. You're not as aware of your surroundings.
And that as well, like, it increases the loot. So obviously more people who are loot focused are going to come in for those. It increases the arc density. So there's a lot more arc flying around the map.
This is for the... So I think the guy was just talking about, this is just weather on a normal
map.
Oh,
that's a midnight one. Yeah,
so you can't pick these. But we'll go into those ones. So there also are, I suppose, much bigger changes to the maps, known as a night raid. So it's at night time. As you said, your loot's better. You can't get out at the special exits. They're all
the
closed.
Hatches aren't closed, yeah.
And generally speaking, people on night raids, because the loot's higher value, tend to be a bit more aggressive.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, like higher arc things. So there's, nighttime raids, which are cool. Again, it changes the whole aspect of it. It is quite cool to see kind of like your, your snitches, things that will try and find you and pull in other arc to attack you. Like, they're quite visible, and it just changes
more arc around. Like, often there'll be two rocketeers flying together, and you're like, we literally just can't fight that.
That's just death right there.
I'm staying away
and
from this.
There's a lot of kind of strategy as well as to when you turn your flashlight on. Because there are parts of the game where it's quite dark, you actually need the flashlight, but that lights you up as...
I had a great one in... There's the loot room, we call it, in Buried City. And I was trying to... You have to kind of jump into this room, and the only way to get it is from this one other building, and there's no other way into it unless you open the exit door, and then people could just rush in and out as they please. But this is quite a popular room because it's great for a loot run, and I was trying to get my money up for this expedition. And so I go in there, and it was a night raid in Buried City, so I ran in, and I looted the room and got everything, but I heard there was someone running up the stairs across the building. And so I stood still, but I had my torch on, but I was like, well, I can't turn it off now, because if they're at that door looking in and there's a light on that suddenly goes off, it's like, they'll know I'm here. So it's like, I'm fucked. And eventually they threw a grenade in, blew up, and they jumped in after it, and we had a bit of a firefight, but they beat me. But it was a really fun interaction, because I kind of did the whole, you know, sometimes when you're playing around, you play into it, and I was like, you know, I was coughing up blood or whatever else on the mic, and the guy was like, oh, he felt so bad.
Yeah.
I was like, no, man, I saw your torch, and I just thought, I was like, yeah, you thought wrong, like making him feel so bad. So he tried to run off and find a defib, came back to me like, a, you know, 20 seconds later, he's like, there's no one around, there's no defib. I'm like, no, man, it's all good, don't worry about it. But it was quite funny, because he thought, flashlight on in that room, it's immediately going to be aggression. Whereas if he had jumped in and seen me and we could have had a chat,
yeah,
it might have been different. But yeah, that flashlight set him off immediately. He was like, I'm going to go in there and kill that guy, because he knew there was someone. And it was someone who was just waiting for him, which I was.
He knows there's somebody in there, but he doesn't think the person in there knows that he's around, not realizing you can hear footsteps on the terracotta above you, kind of thing.
Yeah. And the person in there, like, that's the whole joy of it. Like, they could be friendly, they couldn't be friendly. Like, he might have gone into two or three games in a row that's happened to everyone, where you try and make friends and you get blasted and all your shit gets taken, and he sees your light and he's like, this motherfucker's going down.
Yeah,
I was waiting for him,
and he was like, he's waiting for me, but in an aggressive way, he's waiting for me. Like, oh, I was just scared, you know.
Well, you guys don't just call out happy thoughts to the people, and everyone just chills.
I should have, like, in that moment, I should have, because we probably could have had a conversation about it, and maybe gone our separate ways, whatever. But it was quite funny.
Sometimes you do it though, and they don't answer back, and you're like, oh, now they've like fucking geolocated me from my voice and know what room I'm in. I'm fucked. You know, I didn't bring any mines. I wasn't ready for this.
Like, yeah. So there's night modes. Electrical storm is kind of, I guess, where it's nighttime, but it's a very heavy storm, and lightning strikes random places. And if you get hit by the lightning, it does serious damage to your entire shield
as well.
And again, high loot, no secret exits. And I think that's kind of all for electrical storm. That's kind of the only additional stuff. Is just you can get hit by
just
lightning.
The lightning, really. Yeah.
Then there was the cold snap, which was introduced in a update in December, and that was where you just have the map is in snow. It's cold. The longer you stay out, the more frozen you become, and after a point, you just begin to lose health. Mm. And again, increased loot. I think you can get out of the secret raider hatches on a cold snap, because it's kind of daytime. But that added a whole different aspect. Like, if you were in a firefight, like outdoors, you couldn't stay out there for too long, because you're going to get wrecked over time. So again, that was a cool one that changed kind of how you necessarily...
Drove people inside as which is another thing. So like, the meta was much more... Like, I'd always have a shotgun with me just in case, or like...
Yeah, close quarters.
Every building you went into, you'd be like, there's a decent chance there's someone in here.
I love the absolute difference of those play styles, because when I was playing them, I went in with my quick slots full of medical stuff to help people who are coming out of the storm on such low health.
I do that as well, but it's like...
But with a shotgun.
In our lobbies, you're never guaranteed that those people want the help, like, you know? Then we got, there's other ones, there's the hidden bunker and lock gate, which are kind of like special modes for, the hidden bunker is a special mode for spaceport, whereby, and this is a really fun one, I think, it's probably one of my favorite ones to do, although the loot isn't amazing, but there's a bunker in the level in spaceport, and in order to open that bunker, there are four aerials, pretty much north, south, east, and west of the map. Very difficult for you to do by yourself, or if you're on a team of three, to do it by yourself, because you've got so much distance to cover to turn on all these aerials and open the bunker door. So you kind of have to go into the lobby and hope that people are helping. And I remember one of the first times I did it was a really interesting one, because there were, I unlocked one and there was people unlocking the other three, and it was great, and we all went to the bunker, and I was like, this is my first time in the bunker, this is so exciting. But when we got to the bunker door, it's protected by two of the big, like a bastion and a bombardier. Mm. Now, you can sneak by them, get into the door, no problem. But what's interesting is the door opens, or the main door into this place opens up to what is essentially a balcony, you know, in this kind of research building right directly behind it. And you are left with a real kind of choice to be like, do I wait for everybody to do the work and I'll wait at the bunker to jump in? You know, get in ahead of everybody, or do I contribute and get what I can, you know, at the end? Or do you do what I came across the very first time, was do you hide up on this balcony, locked and loaded with a million grenades and as much weapons as you can, and when that door opens and people begin to run in, you become like the ass. So this wasn't me, this is the guy that we came across in my match, where he was just blowing the shit out of everybody who was going in and out. And the funny thing about it was that people were so... And I get it. Like, I have been salty in that game. I tend to be like, one of my rules is it was never my loot to begin with. And I always try to remember that mantra so I don't get too pissed.
You're just holding on to it for someone else.
But exactly. Yeah. But the people in this lobby, because we'd worked hard to open this bunker door. People were fucking furious at this guy. It was like eight people crawling around being like, you motherfucker. I can't believe it. What asshole comes in the lobby, does this? And this guy's just running around being like, you know, punching people, knocking them out and taking all their shit.
I get all the loot. Boom.
But like, but it's a total legitimate way to play the game. And what you have to understand is you just need to be good enough to not let that person do that.
But I think the devs put that in as a way to play the game. You can't be salty about someone just playing the game as, it's a different way to play it, but it's a way to play it.
Absolutely.
And it's the devs designed it in such a way that that is a way to play it.
Yep.
So yeah.
And so that's a great one. And then there's another one, which is the Hidden Bunker, which is the same kind of style. There's four keys that you need to get from four different areas of the map and bring them to the central location.
The locked gate.
Locked gate, sorry. Yeah. The locked gate. And you bring them all to this section and it opens the gate into this like big kind of underground highway or tunnel.
So the thing for that one is as well that if you play the blue gate normally, that tunnel's already open.
Yes.
But the idea behind it is that has a lot of good loot in it. And until the gate opens, all that loot has, you know, that loot hasn't been touched by a single soul. So if you can get that gate open and get in there first, you have phenomenal loot to get to.
Yeah.
And like, it's all the best loot in the map is in there kind of thing. So yeah, that's the, until that opens, you got players milling about the place.
A great, and it's real clever because you have to bring all these keys to a very central location. You know what I mean? And it's one of those things where you walk into this room being like, I have a key, but are the people in here, are they friendly? Are they not friendly? No, yeah. Andrew, for you, they're probably always friendly.
No, actually, I laughed the first time I did that and realized, because there was myself and another guy running around, the German lad, and he'd gotten two keys, I'd gotten two keys, so we had what we needed to open it kind of thing. And we're running back in, and there was a load of people waiting at the door. He's like, oh, grand, Jeff. Okay. And he just goes to me, like, last time I did this, they killed me and took my keys. I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to kill people, because that's not how I play the game. Kind of thing. And I explained this to him, he goes, I will deal with them. And he runs in and he's there talking kind of stuff like that. And as he's talking, he props a deadline on the ground between all the guys. He's like, no, we're here. We're missing one key. So we're just, if you can hang on a second, beep. And bye, and runs. And they're all going, wait, where is he? Boom, all dead, all flares go up in the sky. And he goes, oh, now we can open the gate. It's like, I feel so dirty.
Yeah.
I was a part of something that I don't approve of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we got in, put all the keys in, ran down, and he shot me in the back as soon as he got to the door.
Yeah, that's
and the thing was like, I'm sorry, but I need this loot. I was like, that's fine, man. That's great. It's
yeah,
good
that's okay.
But I love those kind of interactions. But yeah, you got this thing with the locked gate, whatever it is, that you go in together and can get really good loot in this place. Although it becomes, as you said, that it's the reception, isn't it? And the underground reception is the
reinforced reception.
Reinforced reception, the PvP
spot in. It also has amazing loot, but it's a... like tight corridors, a bit like Stella. Mm.
Yeah.
And that's always, like, even in friendly lobbies, you run by and you can hear people dying down there. Yeah. It's like, I'm not.
Well, guys, because that's my loot run, as I showed you. Were you there that time I opened up the red room?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's my loot run kind of thing. But it is. It's even on the
friendly lobbies, Care Bear that's lobbies, the still, risk is.
And the worst part about that is that door only opens and closes from the outside. So you'll run in and start looting it, and you hear the door shut behind you, and all you hear from you is, you drop everything you have, including your guns, or I'm not opening this door. It's like, hey, you know, I'm going to drop my guns. I'll hear them hitting the floor. It's like, shit.
Yeah, fair. And then the kind of the last one we had, which was the newest one, was the hurricane, which is a massive wind storm that comes in. While you're running, your shield that you have equipped will slowly degrade, but it also sparkles the entire time. So if you have your shield equipped and it's degenerating while you're running around, you very much stand out in terms of very much an easy target for other PvPers. I've seen streamers and stuff like that. Some of them go out without their shield equipped, which to me is fucking madness because it degrades at such a slow point that it's, for me, I'm not worried about losing my shield in terms of, but they go in because, I mean, they're fucking amazing players in the PvP thing, but they go in as like proper like fucking chameleons in the wind.
Yeah.
So that like following the sparkles in the storm to go kill those people, but they don't sparkle because they haven't got their shield, but it's a high risk, high reward because if they do see you, you've got no shield, so you're
you get shot in two shots. Yeah.
Which is a great way to play it. Any thoughts, any last things you guys want to mention on the map conditions or all that before we kind of move on, or the map themselves, any kind of points you want to make?
No, I am looking forward to the new map. I do love one thing that we see on the maps now, which is what I was chatting to you yesterday. There's the large arcs, the emperors, which are these massive kind of like skyscraper sized machines wandering around the outskirts of the maps you're on. But as we found, are actually starting to get closer now. So they're much bigger and more in your face and everywhere, and they are huge.
I must I took a video when I was playing the other day because I went out with one of my loadouts that gives you just a pair of binoculars, and for the first time in the game I think at the beginning of the game you have to use your binoculars as part of an objective.
Yeah.
And I had not touched them since. This is the first time I used my binoculars, like 200 and something hours later. I was like, oh, binoculars. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I saw this Emperor thing and zoomed in. It was really, really close. And I was like, fuck, that would be a fun. That would be a fucking fun thing to fight. Like, because the interesting thing about the game is that the game was always meant to be a PvE only game. If you look at the launch or the reveal trailer for this game from 4 years ago, people are fighting fucking gigantic machines all together with like they all have like jetpack jump boosts and stuff like that. And they're all working as a team, this whole lobby coming against these massive big things. And I'm like, that looks, you know, that was obviously a concept that they couldn't maybe fully deliver in the way they wanted to. So they turned to PvP, which has made the game, I think, exceptional in its own way.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at this thing being like, this is a really interesting game I'm looking at as well. You know what I mean? And I guess when you have something as big as the Emperor, that's probably going to have to be how it works if you want to beat this thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So that'd be quite cool. But yeah, we happy to move on to kind of our weapons stuff. One of the things we didn't talk about is essentially our loadout, which is 90% of the game. I think 50% of the game, I think, is fair. You have augments, or what they're called, which is kind of what your base thing is to go into a map with. Different augments give you different spaces for either quick use items, which are grenades or health items, or give you more space just for general loot, or can give you bonuses. Our favorite, I think, is possibly the survivor, the looting Mark III survivor.
Yeah.
Which is when you are knocked before you're killed, if you don't move, your health regenerates. So in theory, if you get knocked but not killed, but you can like sneak out, you can still extract while crawling, which is...
But it will take a while.
It'll take a while. I've not succeeded, but I've been in games where I think, Kev, you succeeded two or three times with a...
Yeah.
And it's been very funny to watch because we had a great one in the damn Battlegrounds.
Yeah.
Where guys were hunting you.
I was like, because we'd fought, it was... We got caught out in the open. It was a cold snap, was it?
It was a cold snap,
it was a cold... Did they do cold? Yeah, they do cold snap. Yeah, I think it was a cold snap. It was something and we got caught out in the cold while we were fighting and it all got real difficult. You died. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to, you know, jump over this balcony. There's like an underground kind of sewer tunnel thing that leads out. I was like, oh, I'm going to jump off the balcony and like catch it on the way down, you know, great movement, whatever. Just completely missed my catch. Hit the ground. Flare goes up in the air. I'm like, for fuck's sake. And I actually think I landed and then the cold killed me. That's what it was. So I start crawling out. There's like a tunnel that leads out into a big plain, which is the direction I need to go. And I crawled out there and I could hear the footsteps behind me. And I managed to get out and like hide under the tunnel. And because it's third person, I rotated the camera and we could see the guy coming to the tunnel and standing at the edge, like a meter above me, looking for me. Then he went back to loot your body. So I crawled away again. I like hid in some trees or whatever. I was like, okay, I'm going to recharge here because your health goes down as you crawl. You have to stop and recharge periodically. And just after I stopped, the guys run straight past me in the forest. I'm like, oh, holy shit. I'm not going to make it out of here. They're like looking around again. They disappear off the exit. I crawl my way across this big open plain. Like any second, I'm going to die. Took me like 12 minutes, but like managed to get out, kept on my shit. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Because that is the tough part about the game is when you are fully looted up or gooped up, as the Burnt Peanut would say, to lose that is such a tough pill to swallow sometimes. And again, I try my best with the mantra of it was never mine to begin with. But sometimes when you're like, I have all those things that I needed for this thing that I'm trying to do and it all gets taken away from you, that's really hard. But like, so loadout's the main part of the game. Different loadouts or different augments mean you can equip different shields, light, medium, heavy. The heavier it is, the slower you move, but the more protected you are, a fair trade-off. And then, of course, you've got weapons. And... Throughout the game, especially, it doesn't matter so much for us now because we've completed it. We completed it ages ago, but you have workbenches in this game back in your base. And you use these workbenches to refine different materials, to make your weapons, to create any item in the game, really providing you find the blueprints while you're outside. With those others, you can create all sorts of different guns and attachments. Do you guys have a favorite weapon loaded? Like, you take two weapons with you. Mm-hmm. What's your go-to two weapons?
My go-to, like, standard weapons are... an anvil and an El Toro. So the anvil is like a single shot, like 6-round kind of magnum, heavy ammo, does a lot of damage, good armor penetration, great against people, whatever else. And then the El Toro is a shotgun that's great close range and actually way better than it should be medium range. Like,
oh yeah,
really strong for PvP, which is a nice balance. If I am going in to really, really fight people, it's the Volcano, which is like a semi-automatic shotgun, which is an epic rarity weapon or whatever, which is fantastic, and a Stitcher or Bobcat, which is like an SMG. And between the two of those and a map like Stella Montes, you can just like
rinse people.
Me at the game with Niall and Colm that we always bang on about, where
you
after we
were
finished, we killed the lobby. There was like 19 people dead after we finished, just bodies everywhere in this lobby, like looted everyone and got out, just like deathly quiet as we were leaving, do you know?
Yeah, no one else here.
But that was like the Volcano was the main thing, and it was just, everyone was in there with free loadouts or whatever, and we were just walk through water kind of thing. Yeah, it was amazing.
And to your kind of go-to two weapons?
I've got two loadouts that I go in with. So both loadouts will always have a Renegade with a silencer on it.
Yeah.
Maxed out clip as well. It's got about 20 rounds and a Renegade. So it's
because the standard for a Renegade is 8 shots. So the maximum to get up to 20 is essential.
It's plus 12 clip. It's and with that, it's like you can take out most of the flying or rolling arcs. The drones and the rollies, pretty handy kind of thing. And because it's silent, you don't attract unwanted attention from other players if people are feeling a bit, ooh, there's someone with a nice Renegade, let's go after him kind of thing. And then if I'm doing it in a game where I'm just looting, I'll take a Venator with me. Mm-hmm. Also silenced, just because I like my little ghost game.
You can't silence a Venator.
Oh, yeah, you can't.
Oh, no, sorry. So what is a...
You can only put the clip or put a...
Front mag, Brick. Not a stock, like a
grip thing.
Grip,
yeah. A grip and a mag is all you grip put on the Venator, yeah.
Because that's
yeah.
why it ends up being, that's why it's so PvP heavy, because it's like you can't silence it, but it's really good against players.
Yeah.
But if you're using it against Eric, you're just telling the whole map we are, because everyone knows what a Venator sounds like.
But that's what it's for there, is if I'm just looting to guard my loot, that's what the Venator is there for. But again, I mean, I only use it in self-defense. I don't purposely go hunting players, as my knockdown count shows.
Yeah.
And then the other one is obviously the same Renegade, but I'll bring in a Hullcracker if I'm going after the Ark.
Yeah, yeah, which is kind of like a grenade launcher, essentially, but it only blows up if it hits robots.
Only blows up if it connects to the robot. If it hits the ground, it's not going to blow up. If it hits another player, it's like getting hit with like a teabag. It does nothing to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, it used to be a case I'd bring, because I had, before I went to the first expedition, I had the blueprint for the Equalizer.
Yeah.
I think I brought my last one out. I think you guys were on
this,
that game.
So this is the funniest thing, because you, one of my funniest memories, and again, this is what the game is about, I think, is all these funny memories of playing the game. You hopped onto a lobby with me and Kev, and where, now again, I'm guilty of this with a Tempest, I'll get onto that one in a second, but like, you came onto one, was it with an Equalizer that you had, or the Aphelion?
It was the Equalizer I had, yeah.
Equalizer.
In Spaceport.
So like, we're in Spaceport, we're in a, I would say at this stage, based on your matchmaking and our matchmaking, probably a 50-50 at best.
Yeah, for what we're going to get lobby-wise.
Aggression versus kindness. And, you know, it's this thing of like, when we're playing our matches, it's all dead quiet and we don't want to alert anybody to our thing. And you're like, hey guys, do you mind if I take out this Rocketeer? Hey guys, do you mind if I take out this Bastion? And anytime you take out your Equalizer and some grenades and create all this hubbub and explosions, and now you can hear this Equalizer going, boom! Like this really like loud gun, very recognizable for what it is. And all of a sudden these guys start attacking us. And you're like, what the fuck are they doing? I'm like, you've been blasting an Equalizer for 15 minutes.
Yeah. What I do love about the Equalizer as well, like it's a beam weapon. So any other gun you fire, it's like a shot or a grenade or whatever going to the sky. With this thing, it's literally a giant arrow in the sky pointing to the exact location you're currently sitting in.
Yeah.
Which never bothers me on the PvE lobbies because, you know, everyone's going, oh, that gun's amazing. That's so much fun. That's cool. Can you take this down for me? Sure. Whereas in this lobby, it was a case of I was firing it and the next thing I know, my sniper rifle just fucking pings off my head.
Yeah, someone's sniffing me like, I want that Equalizer. Yeah. Like, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and there he is right there where the glow is coming from.
Yeah. This man with one of the most valuable guns in the game that is terrible PvP and he's just standing in the open shooting at robots. Like
because in every other lobby I'm in, it works perfectly.
It's like taking candy from a baby for them. Like,
oh,
you know?
It was, yeah. And so the worst part was because of the amount of loot I had on or kit I had on me at that point, when they started shooting, I was like, you know, don't make me around, I'm full of chocolate.
We did get away from that, actually.
We did, yeah. Like, it was close, though, because we got pinned down for ages. But we had the other funny one, Kev, you and me were doing one, and because certain weapons are very recognizable, and the Tempest is like a submachine gun or a machine gun, essentially, that...
Yeah, like
very
an assault rifle. Like but epic, like, purple rarity and really good PvP.
Yeah. Very recognizable in terms of the sound. And I hadn't taken it out at all yet. Like, I was just using my anvil on Ark, make everyone around. And I was like, needed to reload my anvil, but I was getting, you know, hassled by two wasps. So I was like, take out the Tempest. And we hadn't been bothered by anybody.
Oh, we'd met two separate teams and they were friendly. And we were like, this is such a great lobby. Like, everyone's been so kind and nice. Like, what a change.
And I'm just above the swamp on Dan Battlegrounds. So, you know, could be people in there you don't know. So take out the Tempest. I'm like, you minced these two wasps. I'm like, oh, excellent. And then literally the moment I stopped firing, I yell, stop, soup, soup, soup. Like, all the shots
coming
at me, I'm like,
directions.
Oh yeah, okay. It is literally just a call to arms, essentially, this Tempest thing. So that's another great thing about the guns, is that there's these, people know, they can almost smell how rare your stuff is.
Yeah, but that's saying every gun has a very distinct sound to it. So if you know a specific gun, you know what to listen out for, going, oh, that guy clearly has an anvil or a Tempest or an Equalizer. Like some numpty did brought on that one.
Yeah. It's very good. And like, there's loads. The utility in the game is great in terms of the grenades or zip lines that we move through levels. Your door blockers, you can go through a door and block it behind you. Trigger grenades, things that you can throw.
It's like we can never cover the game in a podcast.
No, there's never.
So much variety, so many items, so many different ways to play. The interactions are so interesting. The way the different items interact with each other and with players and with Ark.
Yeah, and how players use certain things as well in such in situations.
It's just brilliant. Like, yeah. It's so, like, hiding behind a door and setting up, you know, mines, blah, blah, blah. Or, like, Burnt Peanut had a thing recently. We called it the whatever wall, where he'd set up, like, a barricade kit, which is, like, a portable wall you can put up. But then on the front, he'd set it up, like, a meter from a door and then put, like, four explosive mines on the front. So the moment someone opens the door, all these mines come flying into their face and explode, you know? But, like, those are the things you can do, and people get really creative. And, like, sometimes you get killed by stuff where you're just like, you know what?
One of my favorites was the pulse mine. Setting up a zip line to the top of this really tall building, and you place a zip mine or a pulse mine down, which kind of, it's just, it doesn't harm you, it's just a shockwave. When I was watching a clip of some guy being like, okay, I'll place a pulse mine here, and I'm going to fire my shots off a little bit and attract some attention. He does that, and literally, like, 30 seconds later, you can hear someone going, like, coming up that zip. But because he's placed the pulse mine on the side of the zip line, when your man lands down, the pulse mine goes off and blasts him off the top of this building, which is a massive drop. And you just see him going off quiet for a second, and then like a flare going up, like,
yeah.
And it's all this kind of wacky way to fucking, you know, ruin people's days. Like,
I saw one streamer doing it there as well, where he had that same pulse mine. So you go up the zip line into the control room for the tower on
Spaceport?
Damn
Battleground, yeah. Sorry, yeah.
So you go up to that, and there's the door there, you go through and think, but what you don't need, put the barricade after the door, put the pulse mine on the front of the barricade, and you'd put a breaching thing on the door as well. And then on the other side of it, so before doing this, you'd put explosive mines on the wall opposite you. So as you come up there, kind of, so a player comes up, misses all the explosive ones, starts breaching the thing. As soon as he opens that, he gets launched backwards by the pulse, hits the explosives, they fly him forward, and the impact of the barricade kills him. And your man just walks up, loots him, resets, sits back in the corner, and says, and now we wait.
Bloody hell. But we felt like there was a great map, and we were doing that kind of the hidden bunker on Spaceport, Kev, and we came across, again, it's a really good reaction or interaction with people, that you have to switch on these aerials to get the... But when the aerials are switched on, you get attacked by Ark. So we go on, switch on the aerials, we're getting attacked, or we hear these guys getting attacked by Ark, and we jump up to the roof to go and help them. And these two guys are getting obliterated, not by Ark, but by another team of two players.
Yeah.
And these two guys are on, being like, oh, no, these guys fucked us, you know, gotta help us, gotta save us, whatever. So we get into a great fight with these two guys, but I got knocked off the building, but because of the utility or whatever, ziplined up behind these guys, came up, you had managed to kill one, and were locked down almost, you were waiting,
and I was like calling where he was for you, like, yeah, calling the plays, and like, yeah,
and so I get a zipline, zip up, jump up behind him, and it was so funny. What did I say? In a Terminator voice, real stupid, but I came on the proximity chat. I was like, you forgot to turn around. Because I came up the zip thing, because I jumped up behind him and shot him, and we won the fight, whatever else. But those kind of moments are, I think, what makes the game so great, is that, like, and generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, in a PvP thing, people aren't ever too salty. You can have a good laugh with people. Like, if you win or you lose, you can have a good laugh with the... Because they're all around you fucking getting ready to kill you and loot you. And there's always a good bit of banter back and forth, which I think is what makes the game so enjoyable for me, because I've never played multiplayer games with that as the experience.
Yeah. That proximity chat. I think for that is because in other games where it's like it's PvP, generally speaking, PvP is the purpose of the game. Whereas this, the PvP is done, and now it's the case, well, you're still playing the game. That hasn't ended the game, and everyone's having that little bit of a laugh afterwards, going like, yeah, well, that fair play. That was, you know, that was a bit of fun.
Nice. We'll touch on our last kind of points before we finish up this episode. So I want to talk about kind of like the objectives, the missions, the decks, the kind of the things that they give you to do, I guess, essentially. Decks are a thing that you build up blue coins. I don't know what they're actually called, but you build up blue coins for fulfilling certain objectives, like getting out of this place safely, destroying so many Ark, dealing damage to raiders. You get these blue coins, and they build these decks, which are essentially cosmetic and item rewards.
A bit like Helldivers 2, where you get the... They're not Battle Pass or whatever, but you know you can unlock the...
Yes, I forget what they're called.
Any Battle Pass, and you unlock weapons and that sort of stuff. You don't unlock like specific weapons that only you can have, but you unlock costumes and you unlock items that you can then bring in, like disposables or whatever to bring in with you.
So that's quite good. So there's a reason to do that. Then you have the kind of the missions, like the main game missions, which I was doing my best to follow. I'm a narrative lover, and I want to know... Like, I'm in the Ark Raiders, and I'm looting and I'm shooting, but I'm like, well, why am I doing all this? Which is, I guess, it's a me thing. That's not another people thing. But for me, I'm like doing these missions, and I'm like, I don't think there's any... I mean, I could not do these missions and still be playing the exact same game that I did the missions, because like, I'll be doing the expedition tomorrow, like, you know, after this episode goes live, so I've signed up for it, and I have to do all those objectives again. But having done those objectives, I'm like, I don't really have a full, I don't have any understanding of really the game so much, because it's kind of like, hey, can you go to the spaceport and put up this aerial? Our friends need to know about whatever. I'm like, but what's the history? How have we ended up here? Yeah. I'd love for it to give me just that little bit more in terms of the missions, because there's very little in terms of the lore. And the lore looks like it could be fucking amazing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the lore is kind of based through the codex, and you unlock the codex things as you obviously come across new arc and stuff.
Yes.
So if you read the codex, it gives you loads of... And I love that. I love having a codex that you can just read, and kind of it's like a history of the world and kind of stuff like that. So you find out like about the first wave and how it was like rudimentary arcs that attacked and... They fought them off and they won. It was great. And they had like 5 months of celebration. And then they came back, the arcs we see now, like bigger, better, stronger, more vicious kind of thing. And talking about all the different ones that were there.
I have never read this codex. I did not know that there was any information about anything in there.
No, there is certain stuff. And don't get me wrong, yes, it does kind of touch on it. But I kind of, for me, and I say this, but again, I put a fucking, you know, 112 hours topside, so it's not exactly, but I always would love to know, or I get a bit more of a kick out of a game if I'm doing these objectives and things, and there's a reason or a narrative behind why you're doing it. It's generally why I don't play kind of big multiplayer games like Call of Duty or kind of FIFA or things like that anymore at all. I played them a lot when I was younger, but now I kind of need I need a reason as to why a narrative.
I was kind of disappointed as well, because my expectation when we started playing originally, we were kind of because it was me, Darren, and Niall for the most part, because you'd already done an expedition nearly by the time
I was leaning into the expedition by the time you guys logged on. And I think I just dumped like 50 keys on Darren.
Yeah, but we were kind of like, okay, we'll go through all of this together, blah, blah, blah. But we were waiting and we were kind of expecting it to like build us up to like, all right, you know, final mission, they have to take down the queen, like go into a lobby, whatever, and put a bit of emphasis on that. But like it just kind of... the main quest just kind of fizzle out.
Yeah.
Eventually it's like, can you, you know, deliver a Berletta to a box at station?
Because we thought it was building up exactly like that, because one of the quests was destroy a bastion. We're like, oh, it finally wants us to destroy the big
rocketeer.
Arc. Destroy a rocketeer. And after the rocketeer, it was like, can you find 8 prickly pears?
Yeah. Like,
oh, okay. We're back to this. Okay,
And
so it's weird in that regard. There's no... everyone can do the quest differently. There's no set path through the quest. Like you could do one quest and unlock another one and ignore one that someone else is doing and go in a different way. Like they all go the same way in the end. But like,
there's a couple of like different lines of quests.
Yes.
Yeah. You could go really far in one.
Yeah, like I could be looking at a quest and say, I have this one and like the one that I'm really far in and two that I'm not far in. And Darren, you could go like, well, I completed that third one you did ages ago. But the first one I have could be like 6-7 quests ahead of you.
And I think another part that bothers me about the quests is that the quests are given by the traders in the kind of, I suppose, the lobby area where you're setting up, where your kind of home base. But the problem I have as well is that it's devoid of any sort of real life or character from these guys, because they are, I think the deal, and we mentioned on the news episode, I think before, where people did lines for these characters, but then signed a contract that AI could then
extrapolate from that.
Use their voice to do additional lines. Yeah. And it's very, you can clearly hear that it's AI in lots of the voice, especially Celeste. Oh my God. But like, I'm talking to this person.
I go to this soulless woman. Yeah. I'll get myself some spring.
I am like going to be here.
Please give me seeds. This, like, all right, Celeste.
But it's just weird, because it is like this thing being like, hey, can you go and attack the first wave, guys? They really messed up my team. And I'm like, oh God.
Emotion, love. It is.
Yeah. And I think that part kind of took me out of it. And again, it's not a narrative based game. It's a multiplayer game. I get that. But it led us, or at least it led me to believe, or again, maybe expectations were misplaced, that I thought I was going on a journey about, whoa, what is this place? Like, what's going on here?
What if, like, the next new arc is just Celeste, and it turns out she was a robot all along?
Man,
and, like, that's why she sounds
twist.
Like she's...
That was a real enemy all along.
Yeah. Just an army of Celeste chasing
I
you
can
down
get behind some of that shit. Like,
Terminator
you know?
Saw Celeste
yeah.
pegging
throwing
in the
prickly pears at you, like...
You should have brought me more prickly pears. Yeah. So those are kind of things. And then you get projects as well, which are kind of you, while you're out looting items, you build these up and you make them, like one of the ones we have at the minute is a trophy case, and you get all these kind of big arc items to build this trophy case. And when you get enough items, they give you a reward of kind of other more useful items or blueprints, which is absolutely fine. They've been grand. Some of them give you... I suppose some of them had costumes, I think, or at least color variants for costumes.
Color variants for costumes,
and stuff
yeah.
Like
and
that.
I think the main one for the trophy case was that when you get to the end of that, it's you get 300,000 credits. as the always one final rewards, which is an entire skill point for anyone who is looking for
the expedition,
getting money together.
That would be good. I'm way behind on that one. But yeah, so they were kind of another interesting thing to keep you going. And it all builds up to this thing, which is where I have my real qualm with the game. I suppose we'll kind of end it here. We're kind of approaching time. Is the expedition. There's already been one expedition in the game. And then that was in December. So 2 months later now, we've got one in February. And I think the roadmap says there'll be another one in April.
April.
The point of the expedition is you've got to put in a fucking ton of resources and loot and money and everything to get this expedition on the road. And then when it is on the road and ready, you can sign up when the window opens to go on this expedition. But when you do, your character reverts back to level 0. All of your workbenches revert back to level 1. All of your skill points are gone. I'm trying to think of what else. Oh, and all of your loot, everything in your inventory goes as well. Yeah. And you're back to 0 money, 0 items. And I guess the benefits of doing it are you, and I have the money I've put in for this one, I'm going to get 5 extra skill points to put into my skill tree as character, which is a thing we haven't talked about, but I don't think the skill tree is that massively impactful to the game. So you go back, and all of your missions will go back to 0. So all of this, those missions that we talked about that we didn't, that they're all gone again, and you start from 0 once again. To me, and the reason I'm doing the expedition is to maybe make a fairer chat. So on an episode that I'll do, maybe I'll retroactively talk about maybe this in case it's changed my mind. But my opinion on the expedition is a lazy development tool to say, we don't have content, or we won't have content for a while because we're working on it, whatever else. So why don't we get people to do a hard reset, a prestige mode, essentially, for Call of Duty fans out there. And you'll lose everything, go back to 0, and go get it all over again, guys. And here's 5 extra skill points to sweeten the deal. And to me, that's a massive problem that I have with the game, is that's your end game choice. And
I think I look at that, though, as well. It's a case of they want this game to go for like 10 years. They've said like that's their plan, to have this game run for 10 years and all the updates. There's only so much meaningful shit they can bring out on a regular basis. Like, if they're planning over 10 years and updating as they go kind of thing, I get why they put the expedition in. It's to, for those people who aren't purely just happy with the game itself, if you want to go back and get that dopamine hit and get all that stuff again, actually have a purpose to doing it, it gives you that. And yeah, it does reset your stuff, but I mean, I did it the first time. I enjoyed going from scratch again, because you know where all the stuff to get for the workbenches is now. You know how to get like the best guns and stuff, and you know where to kind of look for stuff. You know where to find everything now. First time you're doing the workbenches, you're like, you don't know where half the shit is. Now you do, and it's the same stuff required. And you know what quests will give certain blueprints. Like, I know if I go with Tian Wei, I'll get the Hullcracker blueprint, and that's that and the Renegade are all I need, because
that's how you play the game.
Basically, my two things. The Loot Mark II blueprint, you get pretty handily as well. I think there's in a quest too. So everything I need is through the quests or through the workbenches. I don't need to go blueprint hunting. I don't need to do, like, I can get everything I need, but it's the enjoyment of doing that again and actually having something to, a goal to shoot for.
Yeah.
Whereas at the moment, my goal to shoot for is apparently giving you 450k worth of kit and watching you huddle your way across the map.
It was pretty funny. It was pretty tense yesterday, I have to say. It gave me the last of my money, but I was so over encumbered that when I used all my stamina, it wouldn't recharge. Like, I was more than double my weight. I was just walking to this thing, and I was like, if anybody sees me, like...
We were doing Bird City, and there's me, like, chugging ahead, and I turn around, and I can see his name, but I can't see him, because he's literally moving at snail's pace. I think you're, what, you were... Twice, three times over your weight capacity?
Yeah. So stamina wouldn't even, unless I
wouldn't
crouched,
recharge,
I wouldn't recharge, so I was just kind of walking for ages. So Kev, what's your opinion on the expedition as a model to, I suppose...
I understand why they do it. I think one of the big explanations for it that I was reading about is that when you have a game that's an extraction shooter or whatever, you end up in a situation where you have people who have, you know, like Peanut or whatever, like 80 Bobcats or 100 Bobcats with all the kits and blah, blah, blah. And it devalues guns in the game's economy and has them like pop up too often relative to how they want them to be. So they need to have a way to reset, which I understand. I get the appeal of redoing everything, like you were saying, Andy, with, you know, oh, I can go and get all this stuff again and it's a bit easier and blah, blah, blah. I think part of the appeal for me was going and doing all that with you and Niall originally. And I would kind of be more inclined to do it because it's a multiplayer game for me if I was to do it with you guys again. I don't hate it. I don't love it. I get it. I like that they give you the option.
Yeah,
I probably won't even do it this time. Again, I'm falling off a little bit, so maybe I should to reset. But like, I probably won't do it this time. I'll probably fall off and maybe I'll do it down the road. But it seems like people who are doing it like you, Andy, are enjoying it. And like, I don't think, you know, you can be like, oh, well, it's lazy development or whatever. But also, if they're giving you 60, 70, 80 hours before they give you the option to reset, they've done a pretty good job.
Yeah. If you're paying if you're paying 40 quid and you're getting 80, 90 hours out of a game.
Yeah, man, that's great.
And then
value.
You do a reset and get another 80, 90 hours out of a game. Like, you've got how many hours in the game now?
I've got, well, in terms of actually playing the game, 112, I think, or something like that. But my worry is, and this is where I, and this is why I've done the expedition, and I won't know because it only opens tomorrow, I think, by our time.
7 a.m. tomorrow morning, I believe.
Yeah. And then I'll log on and I'll see what I feel. But there's a part of me that's worried that this will kill the game for me. That I'll log on, I'll look at this, and I'll be like, I don't want to do this all over again. Like, in terms of, I will set it aside until we get like a new map and a big arc, and then I'll come back then. Actually, probably come back then as I'll have nothing. So that could be, again, I think, like, well, fuck, I'm interested to see, when I switch this on, do I enjoy this as a process, or am I very much like, I made a terrible mistake here? I don't know how, and that's why I did the exhibition, because I've been kind of shitting on it, but I haven't done it. So I'm like,
and
that's
I
not
think
exactly
the thing
fair.
As well is, if you haven't done it and you have so much loot built up, of all the loot that was in your inventory, how much were you actually using? Or were you just storing it there?
No, in fairness, I was using... Like, Kev would often laugh at sometimes.
We'd log on, and you'd be like going into the first game. You're like, yep, loot Mark 3 Survivor. I've got my fully kitted Volcano. I've got my Renegade with my purple silencer. I found one of in the last 20 hours. You know, I've got 7 wolf packs, 3 deadlines. We're going to go kill Bastions, and we just get ruined immediately. I'm going in with like a Luton Mark II, an anvil, and a Stitcher, being like, I'm not fucking risking that shit.
Yeah. The value of my, like, you know, my fucking inventory going into a match would be like 140,000.
But you are right in that, like, it's good to use it. Like, I've got the 9 Volcanoes or whatever I've had built up, but I'm bringing them in now on games. Like, fuck, man, if I lose it, it makes no real material difference.
But
to
then
me.
You've had 9 of them, you'll get another one in no time. Like, especially exactly. If we're playing, like, I keep handing off my Volcanoes to you because I don't like the damn thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's
which
like,
is great because now I have 9. But, like, yeah, I get the appeal. Like, I'd nearly consider grinding today and doing an expedition as well just to see.
Yeah.
What it's like, you know. I'm only on level 4 though, so I'd have to do some. I can finish the 4th level now, and then I'd have to do the 5th in one day. Which
I wouldn't suggest it because it requires it's getting the trinkets is your issue. So you'd be able to probably put it with your volcanoes that would cover you for the guns.
Oh no, I have enough to finish the 4th level.
Is that where you're putting all the trinkets and guns and?
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
and then the 5th level is. I don't know what the 5th level is. You just did it. What's in the 5th level?
I did it a while ago. Fuck, what is the 5th level?
We're not just doing it, the bastions and stuff?
Is it just like a certain amount of money? So when you get to, when you complete it and you get to level 5, and level 6 is just, you finish level 5 and level 6 just is essentially, the expedition is ready. There's nothing to do on level 6.
Yeah.
But when the window opens, which it did like 2 days ago to sign up for the expedition, it tells you you've got X amount of money in your inventory and in your... ATM, essentially, like the extra money you have.
Yeah.
That is equating to 2. Whatever million, which when you do the expedition will give you 2 skill points. If you want the 5 skill points,
three million now. They dropped out the.
It was 5 million for the first expedition, so it's 3 million now. So I was kind of saying to Andrew was that I didn't want to do the expedition unless I was maxing out. I was like, because if I do this and I get 2 skill points, and again, 5 skill points, do the skill points really matter that much?
Yeah,
but I was I want to do the expedition and max out what I can in order to do it to make myself feel a bit better about it. So I can't remember what's on level 5, but level 6 is just telling you expedition.
Yeah, if you're
ready.
Doing the one where you're putting the guns in and putting all the stuff in, that's the last one before it finishes.
But it's that, and then I need a certain value in my inventory to get points.
So when you hand all that stuff in, that brings you to the last stage of it, and then passive money.
So
gathering,
I could do that immediately, but I probably won't have that much left over. Like, I can definitely finish all of those now because I have my ducks or whatever, but I won't. Then I won't be able to. I'd have to get to 3 million today. I'll just go in and murder a load of bombardiers.
I wouldn't be too worried because, like, I did the first expedition, obviously, when it was 5 million, and I managed to get 3 skill points. So I missed out on the last two.
Kev, level 4 was outfitting. Did you get the humidifiers, advanced electrical components, magnetic accelerators?
Oh, yeah, I've done all that, yeah.
So level 5, the load stage is your combat items worth $250,000, survival items worth 100,000, provisions worth 180,000, and materials worth 300,000. Once you do that, you go on to level 6, which is just basically building up your money.
Okay, yeah, so I can just do level 5.
Yeah. And level 6 is just getting up to 3 mil.
Level 6 is just trying to, maybe that's what I'll be doing with my evening today.
And we can do some fresh raids with
Book Marathon. Yeah. Fuck that neon.
I need to give Marathon a go. Chris will kill me otherwise. So gentlemen, kind of that's the roadmap. I just want to read out real quick before we finish up to what's coming. So we are in February. We got the hurricane stuff like that. March has like a new map condition, arc threat supposedly, a new project, and a Scrappy update. I don't know what that means for Scrappy.
Scrappy's the chicken.
Yeah, but
no, an update. Yeah,
I don't know what the update is for Scrappy.
The thing is, I figured they're probably going to add more stuff that Scrappy can pick up.
Possibly, yeah.
So
more items.
It might be a case where you can get like blue level stuff or green level stuff instead of just the white level stuff.
And then in April, we get the new map. April's kind of the big update. We get a new map in April. We get a new large arc in April, a new map condition. And then the expedition window, the third expedition window, will open in April as well.
And then as well for the new arc as well, do you see what everyone believes the new arc is?
It's got a skull beside it, so I'm not quite sure.
It's a giant terrestrial snake, it looks like. In the trailer, there's a very brief moment where you see a red light kind of like raise up off the ground and do this. Like, I'm making a snake motion with my hand. Kind of like,
for a lot of people
who can't see me making a snake motion with my hand. You see a red light kind of raise up off the ground and make a very kind of wavy thing and that thing. And there's a very vague outline and everyone's kind of figured, oh, well, that's going to be like a giant fucking...
That'd be cool.
Terrestrial snake that just would be quite class as well.
And I think to finish the episode on the closing, unless anyone wants to add anything before we kind of close out.
No, I could talk about this shit for hours, but we're like an hour and a half in. So
hour 20, yeah. We'll finish up here. I think it's safe to say that all of us, regardless of, like, we've recommended to all of our friends, all of them who've popped on, who I did think would be interested in this and didn't think would be interested in this kind of game, have all loved it.
Yeah.
It is a great multiplayer game.
Give it a go, especially if you have friends. Like, I played my first few games. Was like,
if you don't have friends, I'm into shit.
But if you do have friends, it definitely helps to go through it with people. And and be learning together, because the learning curve can be steep, you know?
Yeah.
But it's brilliant.
Recommend. Yeah, you got solid. And fairness, I'm going to say, I said 8 out of 10. I'm going to move that to an 8.5 after our conversation today. I realized it's been a little bit harsh. I don't know things we're talking about. I'm like, that's a pretty good game.
And then everyone can join me in my Care Bear lobbies and we can all just have a good ale time and just, shoot equalizers into the sky.
Kevin, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. Andrew, of course, thank you also for joining us. We are going to do a post show for our Patreon users. You can check that at patreon.com/thegiftofgaming, where we will be discussing, as Patreon people, the live service games, a quick chat on live service games based on Arc Raiders and what we think they are doing, good or bad, for the industry. All to come, check out patreon.com. To our listeners, thank you so much for sitting by for our Games Club of Arc Raiders. And as always and forever, keep enjoying the gift that is gaming. Peace out.